Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, and we are recording this show a day before Halloween and in 2014. And, of course, in with our celebration of Halloween, it stems from a very popular celebration throughout Mexico and a lot of the Spanish regions, and that is a Día de los Muertos, and that's Day of the Dead. Also, it, as I say, it's a big holiday in Mexico, and my guest today is here to tell us about the traditional foods of that holiday, but more than that, she spent the majority of her adult life researching the history and regionality of all the cuisine of Mexico. And that is, it's a richer heritage than many people realize. My guest is Margarita Carrillo Arante. Welcome, Margarita.
Thank you, Linda.
Margarita is a teacher. She's a chef. She's a cookbook author. She was for many years the Mexico's Department of Agriculture's culinary ambassador, an entrepreneur. What haven't you done, Margarita?
Well, I'm a mother.
Well, there you go. I'm sorry, I forgot that. And a mother and a wife. And she has been all around the country here in the U.S. recently talking about her new book, Mexico, the Cookbook. It is truly an encyclopedia of Mexican cuisine, and it is as beautiful to look at as it is to read, and it's published by Faden Press, and I congratulate you on it.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a challenge.
Quite a labor. How many? 650 recipes?
Like 700 and something.
Unbelievable, yeah. And you really, it's interesting because in this book, you cover everything from celebrations and holidays and ingredients in the history, and it is an all-encompassing book. And, you know, I think that there are many people, particularly here in the U.S., who are unaware of how rich and varied the culinary heritage of Mexico is, or even the historical background and the influences. Tell us a little bit about that, about the history.
The size of the book, although it's huge, it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Uh-huh.
Mexico has such a huge wealth in its cuisine, and it depends on the region and the season and the fiesta and the saints.
A lot of religious holidays tied to the
Our cuisine food as well. Is completely mingled with the culture and the religion.
Mm-hmm. And when we think of, I know if I mention Mexican food to somebody, of course they'll say, oh, tacos and, you know.
Oh, yes.
And guacamole.
Well, tacos, is, yes, and yeah. Guacamole, yes, but there are thousands more.
Well, like any country, you've got the regionality is varied with the sea, the mountains, the plains.
Yes. In Mexico, you cannot say Mexican cuisine. You should say Mexican cuisines, uh-huh, because there's completely different style and characteristics of the food of each region.
Well, give us a little education on some of the historical background and influences of the cuisine.
Well, when the Spaniards arrived, we already had a very developed civilization. You know, when Spaniards arrived, the Mayas already knew the concept of the zero, which not even the Egyptians or the Greeks knew. So it was a very, very developed civilization. Mm-hmm. Archaeology and...
Very sophisticated.
And yes, the sky.
Yes, the sky. The sun?
No, yeah, but the,
stars.
The stars and all this and, mm-hmm. and all
astrology.
Yeah. All the agricultural cycles according to the climate and the... It was a very, very developed civilization when they came. But they brought their own and they brought things that today we couldn't think our food without them, you know, like cattle. They brought cows, pork, hen, goat, sheep. They brought so many things. Metal, because we cooked in clay pots, and they brought metal pots.
Pans, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And they brought a lot of things, also diseases. And
yes.
The things they brought mingled with the ones we had, and so our cuisines got richer. And they had a heritage of 100 years of domination by the Arabs.
Mm.
Only 30 years after the Arabs left Spain, they discovered the American continent.
So obviously they brought a lot of those influences with them
as
well.
Of course, right? They brought Arab influences, and Mexico had 300 years of commercial trading by sea with Asia. 300 years of bringing and taking through this route that was called the Nao of China, La Nao de China. And it was not one boat, it was a route and many boats that were all the way coming and going.
So when we reference pre-Columbian art or pre-Columbian ingredients, we're really talking a long history of that.
Absolutely. You know, our ancestors discovered corn 8,000 years ago, and they started handling it.
That's right.
My English.
It's wonderful.
for many years, because the original corn was a little one with a few kernels, and they started handling it and making it bigger and more even, the rows of kernels. And so in order to have now the corn as we have it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the base for our food, for our nourishing.
Indeed. And the nixtamalization.
Nixtamalización. Yeah. Ooh, it's very important.
Mm-hmm. Where they really get the
nourishing.
The nourishment
from
the corn.
Yes, because the corn in itself is a very unbalanced cereal. But when you submit it to nixtamalización, somebody told me that it, in English, is called slake.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Basically, treating it slow, soaking it in lime.
Hot water, boiling it, and with limestone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the contain of calcium turns 20 times more.
Hmm.
And it keeps the niacina, and it turns into a very nourishing cereal.
So and calcium and niacin, very, very important. Yeah.
Digestive for human stomach, which without the nixtamalización is not digestive. So that's why when you eat a lot of corn without, just corn on the cob, you get a little winded.
Right.
because, you know, it's not proper.
Right. Interesting. And of course, we, you know, we talk about New World foods all the time, that, you know, that that the explorers, Columbus and others, took back to Europe with them. And of course, those were the basis of a lot of the cuisine. Not only corn, but the
beans,
right?
Pumpkin,
tomatoes,
chiles, vanilla,
cacao,
many.
Now, the Mayans, of course, they did a lot with cacao.
Mayans and Olmecs.
And Olmecs, right.
The Olmecas were the first, and then from the Olmecas, the others developed.
Hmm.
And also tomatoes.
Yes. What would we do without tomatoes?
Right. Or without chocolate.
How would the Italian cuisine have developed?
Impossible.
We talk about Mexican cuisine, and of course we, as I said before, tacos, tamales, and those things. But many of the recipes don't necessarily involve, you know, the tacos or tamales as eaten as a side dish, you know, to our bread. I don't think people realize the layers of flavors. I like to say layers of flavors, and the time involved and the complexity of
yes.
the cuisine.
Right? Yes, Mexican traditional authentic cuisine is very complex. It's nourishing. It's healthy. We don't have the frying technique traditionally that was brought to us by the Spaniards.
Oh, no, that's interesting. The frying was brought by the Spaniards.
Yeah, we didn't have anything to fry with. We didn't have lard mm-hmm. or oil of any kind.
Mm.
And we just had the natural fat of the animals, so we didn't fry anything. The techniques were on the comal, steamed, mm-hmm. boiled, in the pit, on hot stones, you know, like...
Right, grilled.
Grilled.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, but not the frying yeah. technique.
And that's exactly what was my next question, was you talk a lot about the history of the techniques and the utensils. So frying was, and that was a new one to me, that was brought by
yes, by the Spaniards. Mm-hmm. And they got that technique from the Chinese, mm-hmm. from the Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it became, when they brought lard and oil, it was very expensive for the people to buy. So only wealthy people could eat lard or oil. And it became like a status
uh-huh.
thing, you know. So there is even a saying in Mexico that... when there's a person you haven't seen in a long time and you say, oh, how is Mr. Smith doing? Oh, very well. Now they even cook with lard.
Huh.
You know?
Made it. Right?
Yes. Now they have a very good economic situation. Now they even cook with lard.
That's
they even eat with lard. So it became like a status thing. Mm-hmm. And then fried food keeps longer. And the many Mexicans, many, many in little towns and didn't have electricity. Now many do, but still some don't. But the majority have electricity now. But they didn't have any refrigeration. So in order to keep the food longer, they would fry it.
And then it would hold.
Uh-huh. Oh,
mm-hmm. Interesting.
But that is why... It got very, I don't know, they took it as, you know, we're rich, we're going to fry with lard, you know?
Mm, indeed.
But now we know that it's not healthy, so I'm against frying.
Well, it's funny how everything kind of comes full circle, and now, you know, frying was a new thing, and now we've moved away from it. Right?
You can see in the book there are very few fried recipes, very few.
Mm. But then we wouldn't have churros.
Yes, we wouldn't have churros or Churros are delicious, yeah. Or tostadas. Yes,
right.
Yes.
Well, now, you come from Mexico City. You live in Mexico City. Now,
I live in
but
Mexico
you originally
City. From Chihuahua.
In looking at the regionality of the different food, of course, Mexico City is totally cosmopolitan. I mean, you can find fine French food and Italian food and everything there. Getting to the roots of Mexican cuisine, if you're in Mexico City, it takes, you gotta dig a little bit, huh?
Yes.
So
yes.
You traveled all around the country.
All around the country researching.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do these long trips because I have three children, three sons, and one extra son that God sent me is my brother's son. So I have four boys. And, raising a family.
That's a handful.
It's, believe me, especially when they are boys. Yeah. I don't know why, but they take so much energy from you. But my husband always backed me up on this. He was always so supportive, and he took care of the boys while I was going back to university to study culinary arts because I have a BA in education. And then I went back to university. But I couldn't have done all this professional development without my husband's support.
Mm-hmm.
Impossible.
Yeah. Well, and the book certainly is a testimony to that, that you really went all around and have the representation of all the different cuisines.
And I have some friends who have shared their recipe with me, their recipes, thank you, and some other authors. And, I did a lot of research. And, of course, it's impossible to go all the way to little places in Mexico without being away for a very long time. But I tried to cover everything.
And indeed, it certainly looks like you did. We talked about a lot of the New World foods that most people are aware of. But what are some of the other important ingredients to the Mexican cuisine that we might not be familiar with?
Well, definitely quelites. Quelites, the word quelite comes from the Nahuatl language, the language spoken in center Mexico, mm-hmm. Nahuatl. The word quilitl means leafy, green, edible.
Oh.
Wild, leafy, green, edible. And you have lots of quelites, lots. And we eat them a lot. Because we didn't have, before the Spaniards came, all the cattle and these animals. We were mainly vegetarians.
Mm-hmm.
And we ate insects, a lot of insects. We still do in season, but they've become very expensive. You keep them for special occasions. And we ate, of course, we hunted and recollected. We ate lots of duck. Because duck came from Canada and North, U.S., mm-hmm. to the lake where Mexico City was based.
And turkeys were always wild in the region, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Turkeys are from Mexico.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And this is a very interesting story that Spaniards took turkeys to Spain, to Europe, and turkeys are very adaptable animals. So they spread all over Europe. And then when the pilgrims came to the U.S. to settle, they came with their turkey.
They brought them back over again.
Yeah, they brought them back. Yes, and as everything that was wild and strange in that time came from Turkey, they called these animals turkeys.
Interesting.
Yes, so now you eat turkey on
Thanksgiving and all year long.
No, and on
Mexico.
Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And is this turkey, we domesticated turkeys, hairless dog, and rabbit to eat. We don't eat dog anymore, of course, but we didn't have any other things.
Right.
And yes. just, well, deer, venison, and wild boar, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. A lot of, you mentioned insects, and I know that grasshoppers are still
oh, yes.
very much on a menu. Even here in New York City, one can find grasshopper tacos. And,
yes,
and
or dipped in chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
I know somebody told me.
Yeah. And, of course, cactus plays a big role
yes.
in the fruit and
nopalitos.
Nopalitos
are delicious. You will find lots of recipes in the book.
And those are the big paddle leaves of the cactus.
Yes, we oh. eat a lot of nopalitos and a lot of the quelites.
And the fruit,
tunas. Tunas, green, yellow, purple. Mm-hmm. We eat them. They're delicious. Orange.
Interesting. Well, we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk about Day of the Dead.
Yes, Día de los Muertos.
You got it. Okay, stay tuned.
You are listening to It's Been Great by Alan Wilkes.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, we're back on A Taste of the Past, and I'm speaking with Margarita Carrillo Arronte.
Carrillo.
Carrillo. I'm sorry, you do that so much better than I do.
No, but okay. You do it very well, Carrillo Arronte.
We were, during the break, we were talking about the regionality. I touched on that a little bit, but we didn't really describe it. And, of course, anyone who has an adventurous palate and eaten food from Veracruz knows that there will be a lot of fish. Obviously,
oh, yes.
They're on the ocean. How many regions? I mean, there are a lot of different states. We mentioned that. But how many regions for regionality of food?
We could divide the country into 8 regions, more or less, which is Baja California mm-hmm. and, you know, all the peninsula, and also Sonora and Sinaloa. And then you have the center north, which are Chihuahua, Durango, Tamaulipas, Coahuila, center north, Zacatecas, and then you have the east coast, you have Tamaulipas, and then you have the Gulf, Veracruz, Tabasco,
mm-hmm.
and then you have on the west coast, you have Nayarit, Michoacán, Oaxaca.
Oaxaca. Mm-hmm.
And in the center, you have El Bajío, which you have Querétaro, Estado de México, Puebla, Estado de México is not Bajío. Jalisco, the center states. Mm-hmm. And then you have Mexico City, the El Valle that we call El Valle, this Mexico City that is huge.
Huge,
and then you
right.
have the central states like Tlaxcala, Puebla, and you go to the southeast, and then you have these beautiful Caribbean states like Yucatán, Quintana Roo, and Chiapas.
Right, right. I think Oaxaca has probably done more than many of the other regions in promoting its food.
Their food is fantastic.
I know. I was totally intimidated. We were talking about turkey. So in 1 year, I was totally intimidated. I thought, well, I'll make a my son wanted to experiment. We'll do a turkey mole. And when I read that it took 2 days to make the mole, I thought, oh, it's too late. I can't do that.
It's an adventure. Yeah. But if you organize yourself well, you can make a very good mole. Just organize and start by parts and don't stress.
Well, and they're back to the utensils again. So much grinding takes place.
Yes, but I don't expect you to use a metate. But then you have a food processor.
Right.
So yeah. It's, you know, when my aunt, my father's sister, she was 97, so she decided she would stop cooking. At 97, because she was still cooking for her sister, who had Alzheimer's, and she was 95, but the other one was better. And one day she sent the chauffeur with all her kitchen appliances. And I called her, Tia, what happened? Why did you send me all this? And she said, I'm not going to cook anymore, and you are the only one who will appreciate. So everything is for you. And one day when she came back, she told me, well, she came to teach me how to cook when I was newly married and with all her things there. And she said, the only thing we won't be able to do is the peanut cajeta because we don't have the woman to grind on the metate. Mm-hmm. And I told her, oh, yes, but I have an electric metate. You do? She told she, you know, her little eyes opened like that. You have an electric metate? Yes, it's called food processor. So food processor is a fantastic.
Yeah, great invention. Time saver. Indeed.
Yes.
Right. Brings us to Dia de los Muertos.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Tell me a little bit about that, the celebration.
Dia de los Muertos is a very important celebration. And I want people to understand that it's not a fiesta. We don't dance, get drunk, or no. It's an intimate celebration with the family.
It's an honor. You're honoring people.
Yes. It's the day in which you prepare everything for your dead ones to come and enjoy. It's one day in the year that they come back and enjoy the food and the things they liked. You know, for in my house, even though I won't be there this year because I will be traveling.
Right.
I will be in New York. In my house, there is the altar because, you know, my sons are there and it's important to have the altar with the photographs of your dead ones, the food they liked, the glass of water for their thirst, and flowers, important flowers, bright yellow, orange flowers, cempasúchil is called the flower, and dark purple flowers.
So orange and dark purple.
Yes. Mm. Those are the colors for the Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And white flowers and candles. You must have candles. And you must have tamales. Tamales are very traditional in Dia de los Muertos.
Mm.
You know, this tradition started before the Spaniards came. And when they came, they were very clever. When they came, they saw an already developed civilization. So they adapted their festivities to the already
established
yeah. festivities, which were normally, according to the planting, the agricultural cycles.
Mm-hmm.
So people could celebrate. So they put together this, and yesterday, this lady who interviewed me was telling me that in China, they have a very similar festivity.
Interesting.
Yes, yeah. It's these very old cultures.
Well, now you mentioned that there must be tamales, and this is in all the regions. Tamales
are in something. All the regions.
You wrote another book a while back called, not that long ago, called, it was all about tamales.
Tamales y atoles.
And you researched some of the lost and forgotten recipes of tamales. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What would have been a lost recipe that you rediscovered or reintroduced to the culture?
Well, there are several, but one very important that not only me, but also Diana Kennedy had recovered is a tamal de espiga. And, you know, corn grows, and at the top, once a year, it grows like three or four espigas. I don't know how to say this in English.
Sprouts, stalks, something.
Yeah, like long with little...
Seed stems.
Like seed stems, yes, but inside these little husks, they are not seeds, but pollen.
Mm-hmm. Pods, so they would be like a pod.
Yes.
Right.
Mm. So you take that from the corn, and it's a long process, but you take out the pollen inside, toast it very quickly, grind it, and add it to the
masa.
Tamales, to the masa. And these tamales are made with wheat flour.
Oh.
Very, very strangely. And instead of caldo, instead of broth, you add pulque. You know pulque, okay. the fermented juice of mm-hmm. the agave. And the sugar is piloncillo, raw cane sugar. And they are very, very special tamales.
Interesting. Unique. It sounds very unique.
Yes, yes. It? And there are many... Some tamales that you cook with the raw meat inside, and they cook inside the tamal. So when you open them, all the juice of the meat is there. It's delicious. Mm. They're really special. There are many. And atoles, too. Right. Atoles and tamales are the marriage, you know, the pairing, the very traditional pairing.
What are some of the other traditional dishes of
Día de los Muertos? Chocolate, hot chocolate, atole. Atole is a corn-based hot drink. Mm-hmm. Can be sweet or savory. Chile atole. And moles, according to the region.
Mm-hmm.
Bread.
Bread. Let's talk about bread. I've seen so many different pictures of bread, and you have a beautiful example of it in the book, Mexico, the cookbook. What? Tell me about the bread, the pan del muerto. What makes it different than a regular
dough? The dough is a little bit different, mm-hmm. and it always has to have orange blossom water.
Oh.
If it doesn't have orange blossom water, it's lacking flavor.
Hmm.
You expect that this bread has. Although they make it in different shapes according to the region,
mm-hmm.
Like in Central Mexico, they make it round with the bones.
I've seen the pictures looking like bones, right?
Yes, the bones outside. There are some parts, like in Oaxaca, they make them in the shape, in the human shape, you know, like a doll. They make it different in different regions, but the dough must have orange blossom water.
Interesting. But it doesn't have it's not sweet.
It is sweet.
And it does, you do add sugar, so it is a sweeter bread.
It's a sweet bread, mm-hmm. yes. So delicious. And when in Central Mexico, when you take it out of the oven, when it's still hot, you have to brush it very quickly with butter. A generous amount of butter and then sugar.
And sprinkle it with sugar, right?
Yes, so it's frosted. It's delicious.
I could see that from the picture.
Yes.
It was gorgeous. And, of course, sugar skulls. I mean, we see the pictures of sugar skulls everywhere, right?
Yes, yes. And the molds are made with clay.
Mm-hmm.
And It's a custom since I was little to, on this day, give my friends a little skull with their name on the forehead.
Oh, how nice.
And and on the altar, I have the skulls of everybody in my house. You know, my sons, the girls that helped me, and my secretary. And, you know, like, for example, in the restaurant, I had the altar with the skulls of the whole
work staff.
And then some of the customers who were very
regular.
Regular, yes. And I had the skulls with their name and give them the little sugar skulls,
gift,
yes.
Oh, delightful. Well, speaking of restaurants, you have had several different restaurants, worked at many different restaurants, and a new project in the works, huh?
Yes, it's coming. It's coming, a new project.
In Mexico City?
In Mexico City, yes.
Well, we look forward to hearing all about
it. I'll let you know.
And there is so much more to explore and talk about, but guess you just have to get the book. Right? Mexico,
well,
the cookbook.
And I hope Fidon gives me the opportunity of making volume 2. I'm already planning on it.
It's terrific. I look forward to it.
Mexico has so much, you know. It was the first cuisine on 2010 to be included in the list of Cultural Heritage of the World by UNESCO.
And you were the ambassador that led that that brigade, I read, too, right?
Well, I was a part of the brigade. We went to Nairobi. But the person who pushed and pushed and pushed and worked so hard is Dr. Gloria López Morales. She's the president of the Conservatory of the Gastronomic Culture, Mexican Gastronomic Culture. And this is a non-profit association. Mm-hmm. We are small, a small group of chefs, historians, entomologists, anthropologists, you know, people working at UNAM, the university, mm-hmm. the National University of Mexico. And many people working very hard. Well, not many people. We're a small group. But working very hard on keeping this, because this recognition that UNESCO gave Mexican cuisine is not an award.
It's an honor.
A recognition.
A recognition and an honor.
That, a great honor, but you have to keep on working.
So you could be taken off the list.
Oh, yes. You
okay.
Can.
All right. Well, I think everyone should go and learn more about Mexican cuisine then.
Please,
and appreciate
do. Traditional,
it. And
authentic.
Keep them on the list of UNESCO's heritage
yes.
cuisines. Well, I thank you so much for joining
thank
me
you.
Today on A Taste
thank
of the
Thank you.
Best. Margarita Carrillo Aronte.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
I'm learning. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. This has been A Taste of the Past, and I'm your host, Linda Palacio.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.